Hey, this is Emergency Bell from Ascension of the Watchers and Fear Factory. You are listening to Josh from Top Gear.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into Talk To Me, episode 267. The guest this week is the mighty Burton C. Bell of Fear Factory and Ascension of the Watchers. Two great bands, one great guy, here on the five-year anniversary of Talk To Me. Now, we will get into Burton and his Ascension of the Watchers album coming out on October 9th. And that will all be coming up over... Let me check my phone here. St. Paul, Minnesota. I don't know who that is. We'll get right... Denver, Colorado. I don't know who keeps calling. So, we're going to get to... Hang on, let me answer. Hello?
You're listening to the Talk To Me podcast, but my name is Baco, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Cobras and Fire podcast, which I hope you also listen to. I am joined with the other host, LC. LC, how are you?
I am great. I'm excited. It is definitely a historic day, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, very historic, yes.
Oh, my God. I mean, what is it, 5 years now? 500 episodes from Toomey? Do I have all my numbers right?
It's not quite 500 episodes, but yeah, he's got a good solid 5 years in on. I want to know how he ended up starting 4 months after us, but has like 40 more episodes than we got.
Well, I mean, he's got the power. He can get the lead singer of Satan's Taint on last minute. Anytime. He's got him on speed dial.
He just snaps his fucking fingers and Satan's Taint's on the phone, man.
Yeah. I mean, that and I mean, I'm proud of him. I mean, he's really cornered. He's made a real niche for himself covering the whole nu metal genre, mostly because nobody else will.
That's a valid point. It is, of course, where I go to anytime I want to hear updates about Pantera and the Tennessee Titans at the same time. Seriously, though, Josh, congratulations on 5 years. It's been a blast getting to know you and be on your show and get to know you as a friend as well. And here's to five more. It is officially on. Cobras and Fire is racing to 10 years. See if we get there before you.
Yes.
Minnesota math.
Okay. Great ass, by the way.
Yeah, firm. Firm and squishy. I'm not sure how that's possible.
According to my rock and pod grab on film. So, yes. I got nothing else. You're a nice guy. Good podcast.
Huge thank you to Loose Cannon, LC, and Baco over at the Cobras and Fire podcast for sending out a nice five-year anniversary shout-out. Huge thank you to those guys. Enjoy going on their shows. I will be a guest on another episode of Whatever Nevermind coming up, and I was just on an episode of Whatever Nevermind, and I've been on Cobras and Fire a few times. So of the 5 years I've done this show, one of the highlights has been meeting Baco and LC and doing the Cobras and Fire podcast. And there have been so many great milestones in this show in the last 5 years. I cannot believe where it's gone, where it came from. Just a crazy idea on the couch one day. It's like, you know what? I think I'm going to do a podcast. I think I'm going to call it Talk To Me. Bam. Name done. First episode was recorded like the week later and threw it up without any thought in how to properly put out a podcast. But I do appreciate each and every one of you that has listened, will listen, listening in the future, and just checking out what I'm doing over here at the Talk To Me podcast. Now, I am kind of sad because normally around this time, I've noticed in my Facebook memories that around this time of the year is normally when I get my Louder Than Life credentials to go to Louder Than Life, do some interviews, get to see a great festival here in Louisville, Kentucky. And this year, obviously, COVID-19 took that away from everybody, and it just kind of bums me out that I was not going to get to go and see a lot of my friends, a lot of my friends in bands, and a lot of the friends that I've made in this podcasting world, in this metal media world that we're all in. But the show will go on, and we will be up and running again soon. I feel it in my bones. We got people going to see football games, got people out doing a lot of stuff, so we will go see some shows when they come through town. And one thing that's been consistent over the last 5 years is our good friend down in Atlanta, Georgia.
Hey guys, my name's Scott Bowling. I have a YouTube show called Good Company with Bowling.
What's up? This is Clint Lowry from 7Dust.
Hey, what's up? This is Sonny Mayo.
Hey, Ricky Rackman.
And you're watching Good Company with Scott Bowling.
I've interviewed bands like Limp Bizkit, Fozzy, 7Dust, Korn. I've had Chris Farley's brother, Tom Farley, on the show. My show is kind of like the modern day Wayne's World. Party! If you love a good interview, a good rock interview, or just any kind of interview, please, if you get a chance, check out my show, Good Company with Bowling.
Make sure to head over to scottgoodcompany.com or check him out on YouTube, and I will have to get down to Atlanta soon to see Scott and be on the Good Company program. But you can also check it out in podcast form. He did a really awesome, like the best of Striper episode. Not the hugest Striper fan, but I'm a fan of Scott, and I'm a fan of Michael Sweet, so I checked it out, and he took some clips of like Head from Korn and those guys talking about Striper, and then he also took some clips of him interviewing Michael Sweet and Striper and just mashed it all up, man. I thought they did an outstanding job. So make sure you're checking it out in podcast form also and checking out the Best of Striper episode that was just released. Very cool. On the last episode, if you listen all the way to the end, I said I was going to announce something big on this episode, and I'm not quite ready to announce it just yet, but I will announce it next week. I might even announce it next week on the social media stuff and let you guys know what I'm up to, but I'm up to something very cool. I can't let it out of the bag just yet, but I've got the logos done, got the new, it's basically a new podcast, but don't tell anybody, what's going on. But in true my fashion, the Talk To Me program will continue to go on. We're just going to do a sidecast here, and it will be a lot of fun, and I think you guys will all enjoy it and get a lot of fun out of it. I think it's going to be a fun show. It's going to be a lot of very cool to delve into a topic and find a lot of the people that are involved in that topic. And that's all I'm going to say for right now, because even though I have the interviews booked, I don't have them recorded. So I'm not ready yet to talk about the new venture. But on this episode of Talk To Me, we have somebody that I know has been on the bucket list, guest list forever, since day one. Got to get Burton Seabell on the program. And then I get the email saying, hey, would you like to interview Burton Seabell? And I said, absolutely. So I got about 20 minutes with him, don't have a ton of time with him, but we talk about Ascensions of the Watchers, talk a little bit about the new Fear Factory, and we get into all that stuff, man. Burton's such a cool guest, and he agreed to come back on. We're going to do some more stuff with him in the future, but what a very cool guest to have on the show on the 5-year anniversary of Talk To Me. And here's to 5 more. So let's check out some classic Fear Factory, talk to Burton, listen to some Ascension of the Watchers, and then I will talk to you guys momentarily. We've got Burton Seabell of Ascension of the Watchers on the line. Burton, how are you today?
Awesome, Josh. I'm doing well. Thank you.
So glad to have you on. Like I said before, man, you've been a bucket list guest for a very long time. This is the 5-year anniversary episode, and couldn't ask for a better guest.
Congratulations.
Thanks, man. And yeah, congratulations on a great new album. You know, the Ascension of the Watchers, the Ghost Heart video's out. Great video, great track. And, just kind of talk a little bit about, what this band is maybe as compared to what everybody knows you from as in Fear Factory. You know, what draws you to this type of music?
Well, first of all, Ascension of the Watchers is a band that I started back in 2002 with John Bechtel. We did one self-released EP called Iconoclast. We did that on CD and vinyl. And then we had a full-length record released on Al Jurgensen's label, which is 13th Planet, called Numinosum. And that was 2008. And 12 years later, we have a new record out on Dissonance called Apocrypha. For me, Ascension of the Watchers is a very personal and introspective band. I write all the music. I write all the lyrics. I play guitar. I write the songs on guitar or piano. And for me, Ascension of the Watchers really reflects my personality and the type of music I've always listened to. So, if people wonder how I've gotten, where my ideas come from for melodies that I've done on, Fear Factory songs, this is a great personal insight to see everything of how I write music.
Yeah, I was digging into the last album. I've just got the Ghost Heart song, obviously, like everyone else does right now. So I kind of went back and listened to the 2008 record today. And just really diving into it. It was funny because I was at work and I work very fast paced. So it's hard. It was so funny having that as a soundtrack to my work day today. I was rushing around, but listening to, much more mellow music. Think that most Fear Factory fans, people that know you from Fear Factory, this isn't a huge departure from what you bring to the band. So I think that most fans will understand and will get this well, side of you.
Awesome, Josh. I'm glad you recognize that because that is the case. This is reflects the type of music I've always listened to and been attracted to and inspired by, and what I've always brought to the table, the Fear Factory. This is me. The record you were listening to, you're saying you're listening to Numinosum.
Yeah.
That record definitely sounds very different than Apocrypha. The production on Numinosum was quite different. It's more compressed. It was all done digitally. And so it didn't really leave much room for sound. This record, I knew what I wanted to achieve. After listening to the last record, first of all, the last record was released in 2008. We did some shows after that. And when we were playing these shows, after Numinosum was released, I realized that the song sounded better live. So with that in mind, that's the kind of vibe I wanted for this record. I wanted more of a live, really sonically deep album where you could hear everything. And the fact that we recorded it at a modern analog studio definitely helped attain that.
Yeah, listening to the album today, it definitely, it's funny you said that about it sounding better live, because I was thinking about it in a setting of being in a room practicing it, or just the three of you guys, the four of you guys, however many you do in the live band, just being in a room with that music all around you. It's very, it just made much more sense to me as a live album, right. And it would be a great mood setter to be in that room, making that music.
Absolutely. Live, it really comes across. Even those songs on Numinosum, those songs they're the same essence, but they just sound more powerful live. And that's what I wanted.
And then with the new stuff, it did seem to be a little bit more guitar driven, had some more defined drums is what I could tell. It just seems more, maybe the production's a little bit more modern on it, but it's obviously 12 years later too. So, I mean, a lot of things are going to change. Is the rest of the record like that, to where it's a little bit more, you know, a little bit more of a foundation there?
Well, yeah, like I said, or like you just said, this record was 12 years in the making. And each song that was written in a poignant moment in my life. Something big happened. Something affected me. So like artists, I would sit down and write what I was feeling musically, either as a guitar or a piano. I didn't really want it to be guitar driven. I did want the guitars to be more prominent than they were on the last record. So with that in mind, over the years, you know, like I said, each song is inspired by a different event. And much like life, it's not linear. We have different experiences in our life. We have, you know, different moments, different emotions that we experience as we go through life. And that's what this record represents. It represents a story of 10 years of my life, a journey in soundscapes and in different moods and different feelings and different emotions. And so every song is completely different.
When you sit down to write, you know, you talk about it being a little bit more personal, and, you know, with a lot of the Fear Factory stuff is obviously, you know, you have a theme and you have a story, and a lot of the, you know, a lot of the Fear Factory albums tie together, things like that with characters and just themes coming through. But being able to kind of free yourself and just write from personal experience, how is that for you to be able to just sit back and just write about Burton, you know, rather than like Edge Crushers and things like that?
It was very liberating. You know, the music, well, the words and the vocals I did for Fear Factory. No, I did write all the lyrics, and all the lyrics are usually my own personal feelings or experiences put into a third person to reflect the vibe of Fear Factory. So it was impersonalized for Fear Factory, whereas the Sense of the Watchers is very personal. It's, you know, the whole record is my heart on a sleeve. So you really get an in-depth view of my personality.
And just knowing the history of Fear Factory, I mean, I do believe that, you know, you kind of came into Fear Factory from more of a different background than just straight up metal, you know, and I think a lot of fans of the band should know that, you know, your musical tastes are a little bit different than maybe what your day job is, you know, your actual,
that's true.
You know, so go ahead.
No, that's true. And I through the years, you know, I've always reflected that when interviews and, you know, my people will ask my musical tastes were. And so, yeah, if you're a Fear Factory fan, you would already know that.
Right. What are some of those main ones, you know, who are the guys you go to when you get asked that question?
Oh God, you know, it's, I have a huge repertoire of music that I love. You know, I'm a big fan of soundtracks. So, this album sounds like a soundtrack. It's like, if you're listening, when you're listening to it, you can close your eyes and see images in your mind. Whatever you're feeling. So soundtracks are a big part of my repertoire. I love classic industrial, a lot of classic goth music, all different types of music, really. I don't know if I really have a go-to, but, you know, if you live with me, you always hear, I'm always playing some Ennio Morricone. I'm always playing the Blade Runner soundtrack. I'm always playing Willie Nelson. I'm always playing, you know, Sisters of Mercy, Nick Cave. But that's just like the, you know, the very tip of the iceberg. It's just, I listen to everything, and that's, you know, I feel like I'm a musical encyclopedia. I listen to all different types of, there's a lot of good music out there that inspires me that I can connect with, because music is vibration.
Yeah.
And as vibrational beings, certain vibrations that you always connect with. I don't, you know, I'll always give something a chance and listen to it, because there's always a chance I'm going to connect with it. And so I have a very open mind when it comes to music.
Yeah, and open minds are very hard to find, especially in the metal world. You know, it's very a lot of the staunch heavy metal guys are it's this or that. It's nothing in between. But there's a there's like a thing going around on Facebook. It's like, go to your recently played on Spotify and post that. And I'm like, no, I'm not. You're not going to get to see what I listen to on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's always different.
Yeah, I'll get kicked out of the club or something.
Yeah, maybe. Restart your own club.
Yeah, might as well do that too. But the Ghost Heart video, who did that video? It looks great, and you know, it seems like it got a lot. It's one of those things where when it got posted, man, it seemed like it went over really well, and which is very hard to do on the internet.
Well, it's doing very well still. It's over 18,000 views right now, which is doing very well. The video, Ghost Heart, was done by a Brazilian filmmaker named Victor Hugo Borgia. He's an animator. He works for a production company that is hired out by like Discovery or Cartoon Network or something like that. Some type of larger production company that they need some artwork for. So he works for them, but he is an independent filmmaker. I met him in 2008 through a guitar player we have, Edu Musi, who's also Brazilian. So Edu and Victor were friends, and so I was connected to him through Edu. And the first time we worked with Victor was for the Residual Presence video that he did for Numinosa. So fast forward 12 years later, we have this new song. So I contacted him, hey, are you still interested? And he goes, hell yeah. So he made it happen. And what he did was he didn't create a video specific for us. But what he did was that he took a film that he didn't use and he repurposed footage to fit the narrative of what the song was saying. And I think what he did for Ghost Heart just blew me away. I was just like, oh man, you did it. You created a surreal landscape. Created almost something new. And for me as a older person from the classic age of MTV, videos were meant to be like a short film to me. It was either like a live show or just a band playing or just something completely different. It's like, oh, we're gonna have this crazy video. And so that's what I wanted a short film. I love film, so I wanted a short film to go along with the song. And so Victor made it happen. He also did another video, which is going to be the second single, which I'm going to hold back on for now, but expect more from Victor.
Yeah, I noticed the, it's got like 18,000 views. It's got like 800 likes, and I think it's got 7 dislikes, and I'm assuming those 7 people are just former Fear Factory members, so.
I don't know. I don't care. When it comes to Ascension of the Watchers or any band, pretty much anything I do, you're not going to please everybody. Whatever you do, not everyone's going to like it. I get it. I'm the same way with music. There's artists I love that I collect most of all their music, but do I like every record that Nick Cave has done? No, I don't. I think a couple of them are not that good. So that's par for the course, but I still remain a fan. The way with social media is these days, so easy to be negative and so easy to talk shit because you're hiding behind a screen and there's no accountability. So it's easy for someone to dislike it. No, don't like it. And not to give any reason at all. Not that you need to give a reason, but people just like to be negative just for the attention.
I think I would rather... I'd rather somebody either love what I do or hate what I do. I just don't really want a whole lot of people in between. Like, it's okay. you would want that. I think love and hate are kind of come from the same part of your brain or something like that. So it's an emotion.
Well, isn't there a song? There's a fine line between love and hate,
right? And a lot of times when you hate something, you might end up eventually liking it one day. So, but when it's just like,
you hate
whatever.
So much. Yeah, well, you hate it so much. you hate it so much because you love it so much.
Right. You're just ashamed to let everybody know that you like it.
Yeah, guilty pleasures.
You know, I was reading through the press release, and it was funny. I came across the Pledge Music campaign, and I was going to ask you about your experience, and then I read a little bit more into it, and I saw that you were one of the ones that had kind of a bad experience with it. So did you know if the people that pledged with you got money back, or did you try to rectify that on your own or anything?
So the Pledge Music campaign was bittersweet. As a campaign, we did have a great campaign, successful. Mm-hmm. We raised 124% of our goal. Luckily, our goal was not very high, so we were able to reach our goal with only like 400 people.
Okay,
which was amazing.
Yeah.
So we were with the success of Pledge Music, we were able to record. Go, okay, we got this ready to come in. So, you know, everything's in the pipeline, as you know, as a musician. There's money in the pipeline. You've heard that term.
Oh, yeah.
So we went with the production. I had friends who had done Pledge Music beforehand who were warning me about how difficult it was to get paid by Pledge Music. And I was like, okay. But they eventually did get paid. So I was like, okay, it sounds like any other title label, that they don't want to give up their money. So nothing new under the sun for me. I can handle it. So after months and months, and we started recording, I think after the Pledge campaign was successful, we started recording like 4 or 5 months later. And it was during, we were still trying to get the money. We started recording, and it was like almost 2 weeks into recording that the news that Pledge Music was going bankrupt came through, and we were just like, what a huge setback, what a huge disappointment, what a huge failure on Pledge Music's part, on everyone. So immediately, you know, we had to regroup. We kept recording, but we were like, okay, what are we going to do now? We urged our pledgers to try and get their money back through their credit cards. So I believe a lot of people who did pledge for our campaign did get their money back or were credited back. Most weren't.
Oh, wow.
We had to regroup, and we had to think of how could we come out on top? First of all, we had to finish the record. We had to mix it. So we got personal loans from friends and family to finish the album and mix it. And we took our time to do that because there was no time restraint. So we were able to take our time to mix this album, which goes to really one of the main reasons why this album sounds so great. It's because we took our time on it. It wasn't rushed. And another element is that, okay, whatever label we find, we want them to honor those who pledged CDs and vinyl. And so when this month came around and we started talking to them and we're like, hey, can you make this happen? They said yes. So those who did pledge CDs and vinyl, whether they got their money back or not, will be receiving their CD or vinyl they pledged. Also, we're still going to, everyone who pledged will receive the digital download of the album. So everyone will get, there's certain things that people pledge that they will not get, like handwritten lyrics, at this time. They're not going to get the major things because there wasn't any money received for production or shipment.
Right.
So that wasn't it. Some things we're going to handle over time and discuss, but for the most part, everyone's going to receive the record. And I feel that we're going to come out on top looking like heroes, quote unquote, to Pledge Music fans that did support us in the very beginning.
So you did at least get a list of names and addresses of people that pledged. You did at least get that part of it?
Yeah, we have all that.
Okay, good.
We immediately got that together before everything went down on Pledge Music.
And the you know, what's the word with the new Fear Factory? We've been popping up, you know, things saying like possibly next year some new Fear Factory, and you know, Dino's kind of fighting it too. So what's going on? What's the truth there? Are we getting some new Fear Factory soon?
Honestly, I don't know. The last thing I know is that we recorded an album in 2017, finished, delivered, artwork, everything. So New Crobots has been sitting on it as far as I know.
Okay. And if you don't have a bass player for it, you know, just let me know. Give me a call. I'll be right there for you, man.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
Well, Burton, man, it's been a pleasure talking to you. We got to do this again. We got to do this more often, and you know, get down into the fun stuff. And real quick, I want one. Brought this tour up a few times on the show, but the one tour I saw you, actually, I think the last time I talked to you in person was on the Fear Factory, System of a Down, Head PE, and Spine Shink tour. So any memory?
1998.
Yeah, probably 98, 99, man. What do you remember of that tour?
Oh, man, that was a great tour. You know, System of a Down was blowing up. It was great. Every show was sold out. We had a fucking blast on that tour. Just, you know, Head PE was funny. they were just, it was a great tour. It was a lot of camaraderie.
Absolutely.
But, you know, if you ever want to speak again, man, just contact Liz and just let me know, or just, you know, text me. And if there's anyone, you know, if there's something funny you want to talk about, or just, you know, me to be on your podcast just to talk shit, I do that well.
All right, man. Yeah, I got a couple of things in the works. I'll text you about. But as we leave this off, man, we'll leave it off with Ghost Heart, and you know, just want to give a little quick story about the lyrics and anything before we get off here.
Well, like I said, every song is deeply personal, and Ghost Heart is about my new wife. So it's a love song.
Could you ever imagine yourself writing love songs? Come on, Burton.
Oh, Leechmaster's a love song.
Too good, man. All right, Burton. Well, I appreciate your time today, man.
Well, awesome, brother. Talk to you soon.
Yeah.
All right, huge thank you to Burton C. Bell for taking the time. Cannot wait to get him back on the show. We're going to delve deep in the Burton C. Bell catalog the next time he is on. And that's going to be a lot of fun. It was very cool. Actually, I only got 20 minutes with him because technically I got 25 with him, but we spent the first five chatting about the past. So I might throw that quick chat up on maybe the Patreon page. So if you want to go check that out, patreon.com/talktome, and I'll throw that up under the dollar tier. But it was very cool. He remembered me from back in the day. So once again, just thank you guys for listening each and every week. Thank you guys for the last 5 years of this show. And so until next week, where my guest will be Joe Catella of Dead, I'm Joshua Toomey, and this has been the Talk Toomey Podcast.